Along with these bums, I picked up a couple of good customers. One day I ran into Bert, a character I knew from the Angle Bar. Bert was known as a muscle man. He was a heavy-set, round-faced, deceptively soft-looking young man who specialized in strong-arm routines and shakes. I never knew him to use anything but weed, and I was surprised when he asked me if I was holding any junk. I told him yes, I was pushing junk, and he bought 10 caps. I found out he had been hooked for about 6 months. Through Bert, I met another customer. This was Lewis, a very handsome type with a waxy complexion, delicate features, and a silky black mustache. He looked like an 1890 portrait. Lewis was a pretty fair thief and was generally well-heeled. When he asked for credit, which was seldom, he always made good the next day. Sometimes he brought around a watch or a suit instead of cash, which was all right with me. I picked up a $50 watch from him for 5 caps. Pushing junk is a constant strain on the nerves. Sooner or later you get the copper jitters, and everybody looks like a cop. People moving about in the subway seem to be edging closer so they can grab you before you have a chance to throw away the junk. Dooley came around every day, impudent, demanding, insufferable. Usually he had some new bulletin on the Nick Rogers situation. He didn't mind letting me know that he was in constant touch with Rogers. "Rogers is shrewd, but he's corny," Dooley told me. "He keeps saying, 'I don't care about you damn junkies, I'm after the guys who make money out of it. When we find Nick, he's gonna fink. He opened up for me once, he'll do it again.'" Chris kept hounding me for credit, whining and pawing at me and talking about the money he was going to have for sure in a few days or a few hours. Nick looked harried and desperate. I guess he didn't waste any money on food. He looked like the terminal stages of some wasting disease. When I delivered to Marvin, I left before he took his shot. I knew he would die from junk sooner or later, and I didn't want to be around when it happened. On top of all this, I was just barely scraping by. The short counts we kept getting from the wholesaler, the constant nibbles of credit, and customers coming up 25, 50, or even a dollar short, plus my own habit, cut profits to bare subsistence. When I complained about the wholesaler, Bill Gaines got snappish and said I ought to cut the stuff more. "You're giving a better cap than anybody in New York City. Nobody sells 16% stuff on the street. If your customers don't like it, they can take their business to Walgreens." We kept moving our uptown meats from one cafeteria to another. It doesn't take the manager long to spot a bookie or a junk pusher. There were about 6 regular uptown customers now, and that means quite a bit of traffic. So we kept moving. Tony's bar still gave me the horrors. One day it was raining very hard, and I was on my way to Tony's about a half hour late. Ray, the young Italian hipster, stuck his head out of the door of a restaurant and called me over. It was a lunch counter with booths along one wall. We sat down at a booth and I ordered tea. "There's an agent outside in a white trench coat," Ray told me. "He followed me over here from Tony's, and I'm afraid to go out." The table was made of tube metal, and Ray showed me, guiding my hand under the table, where there was an open end to one of the tubes. I sold him 2 caps. He wrapped them in a paper napkin and stuffed the napkin into the tube. "I'm going out clean first, in case I get a shake," he said.